Gomez said. I'm doing it, aren't I? But docking with the derelict shuttle was much harder than it looked. Their own thrusters kept blowing it away. When the two ships did finally come together, it was with a good deal more violence than Skye would have wished. But the hatch seals held, and he was able to divert some of their own power to the other craft, booting up its own systems, which must only have been sleeping. It felt too easy, but the shuttles had always been designed for complete compatibility across the docking systems of all the ships. Lights stammered on, and the airlock began to establish equal pressure on either side of the lock. The three of them suited up and strapped on the specialized sensors and comms equipment they had brought along for the expedition, and then each took one of the security-issue machine guns with torches strapped to them, which Skye had appropriated. With Skye leading, they floated through the connecting tunnel until they were emerging in a well-lit shuttle cabin, superficially similar to the one they had left. There were no cobwebs or floating veils of dust to suggest that any time at all had passed since the shuttle had been vacated. A few status displays had even come back online. There was, however, a body. It was space-suited, and very obviously dead, although none of them wanted to look at the grinning skull behind the faceplate longer than necessary. But the figure seemed not to have died violently. It was seated calmly in the pilot's position, with the two arms of the spacesuit folded across its lap, gloved fingers touching as if in quiet prayer.
Oliveira, said Gomez, reading the nameplate on the helmet. That's a Portuguese name. He must have come from the Brasilia.
Why did he die here? Said Norquinco. He had power, didn't he? He could have made it back home.
Not necessarily. Skye pointed to one of the status displays. He might have had power, but he certainly didn't have any fuel. He must have burned it all getting here in a hurry.
So what? There must still be dozens of shuttles inside the Caluche. He could have ditched this one and taken another one back.
Gradually they formed a working hypothesis to explain the dead man's presence. No one had heard of Oliveira, but then again he was from another ship, and he would certainly have vanished many years ago. Oliveira must have learned about the Caluche as well, perhaps in the same way Skye had, a slow accretion of rumor which had eventually hardened into fact. Like Skye, he had decided to go back and see what the ghost ship had to offer, perhaps hoping to score some massive advantage for his own crew, or, just possibly, himself. So he had taken a shuttle, secretly, one presumed, but he had also decided to make the dash at a high fuel expenditure. Perhaps he was forced into this strategy by a narrow window in which his absence would not be noticed. It must have seemed a reasonable risk to take. After all, as Gomez had said, there would be fuel supplies aboard the Caluche, other shuttles, for that matter. Getting back ought not to have proved problematic. Yet evidently it had. There's a message here, Norquinco said, peering over one of the readouts.
What?
Like I said, a message. From, him, I presume.
Before there was any time for Skye to ask him, Norquinco had called up the message, translated it through several software protocols, and then piped it through to their suits, with the audio track playing over the normal comms channel and the visual component projected as a head-up display, making Oliveira's ghostly form seem to join them in the cabin. He was still wearing the same suit he had died in, but now he had the helmet visor raised over the helmet's crown, so that they could see his face properly. He was a young-looking man with dark skin, and a look in his eye of both horror and profound resignation.
I think I'm going to kill myself, he said.